This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Today we begin a series looking at religion and Black America. All this month we'll explore how faith has shaped the Black experience. How did Black folks come to the faiths we have today? It's a huge question, and to explore it, we've got Renita Weems. She's a writer who's taught biblical studies at Vanderbilt University and Spelman College, plus Harold Dean Trulier, associate professor of applied theology at Howard University. Welcome, folks.
Welcome. How are you today? Thank you.
I'm doing great. So, Renita, why don't you start us off with just a sense of, as people boarded the boats from Africa, enslaved, to begin the Middle Passage to America, what kind of faiths might they have practiced?
Well, it was very important, as we understand, as Africans boarded the slave ships and were brought here against their will, that they were people who had part of an African tradition that saw the world as one and not divided. The sacred and the profane were the same. There were important sense of community and a tribal understanding and not a sense of individuality, an understanding of a God that was at the same time transcendent, at the same time very much so a God who was personal and individual, but certainly a sense of freedom and autonomy was their understanding of themselves as they came here. And once they got here, obviously were confronted with a sense of brutality that they'd never understood and had never experienced in their lives.
Professor Trulier, any thoughts on where they came from, essentially, where the Africans who came to America came from in terms of their understanding of how the world works? I think about, we recently did a interview with the Nigerian writer Chinua Achebe, who won a huge prize, and his classic novel, Things Fall Apart, really talks about the clash of civilizations between the Igbo people and the Christian colonialists who came in. And if that happened so many years later, I can only imagine that the people who came to America had their own clash of cultures and faiths.
Well, there were certain things that were part of most traditional African religions that made it very difficult to accept and understand what was happening in their enslavement. One of them would be the fact that many of the traditional African religions had a profound belief in the triumph of the underdog over the more mighty and more powerful enemy. And while that translated into their accepting certain parts of Christianity where that was certainly true, it also created some kind of psychic distress in that they clearly, though they had faith in God, whether it was from a traditional religion perspective or from the newfound faith in Christianity, they clearly were not triumphant in their enslavement.
That raises a question that I wasn't really headed in this direction, but there are certainly strains of the underdog rising in Christianity, which has been the dominant religion among African Americans and remains so today. But it raises the question for me of any time that you're under stress, whether it's under bondage, which is extreme, or whether it's just everyday trials and tribulations, why do people seek faith to begin with? That's a very broad question, but what do we need, and what have African Americans throughout history needed? Professor, let me start with you.
Well, I think that the human condition is constantly struggling with coming to grips with one's limitations. And there are a number of things that can bring stress into our lives. And in the midst of that, I believe that we're simply created to look for something beyond ourselves. We become constantly and consistently aware of the fact that we are limited. And African Americans have been reminded their limitations, initially in slavery, then in segregation, discrimination, and other forms of brutality. And there's just something in the human condition that says there's got to be something bigger than this. This cannot be all there is.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Yes, and I think that also one of the things that made the Christian religion appealing to African slaves was, in fact, this notion of also freedom, and that in Christian religion and the biblical story was the story of underdogs, a story of slaves who were longing for freedom, the story of the Exodus and of exile, and their longing for freedom was certainly an appealing story for the African slaves, and they found resonance in that story that there is a God who would be with them and who sees them and who understands them and who has come down to free them, according to the story.
Renita, let me ask you to tell briefly the story of Exodus, because not everyone grew up reading the Bible. Not everyone comes from a Christian perspective. Just briefly, tell us about it.
Well, in the book of Exodus, the story right after the book of Genesis, the Hebrews have found themselves in the land of Egypt as a result of a drought and famine in their own land. They make their way to Egypt, and there, while they are in Egypt, a new pharaoh rises, according to the story, and they become oppressed. And for 400 years, presumably, they are there for 400 years, and they are under incredible oppression and domination, according to the story. Eventually, through a series of miracles, and certainly the emergence of Moses and some Hebrew slave women as well, they are led to freedom. According to about Exodus, the 15th chapter, there from freedom, they eventually wander in the promised land for so many years and eventually make their way, wander in the wilderness for so many years and then make their way into freedom. So the story of oppression, slavery, servitude, and eventually freedom at the hand of a deliverer, Moses, and certainly God's miraculous intervention on their behalf. It was a story that really resonated with slavery.
Just in case you're tuning in, you are listening to NPR's News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We were just hearing about the story of Exodus from writer Renita Weems, who writes about religion from many different sources. We've also got Harold Dean Trulier, Associate Professor of Applied Theology at Howard University. We're talking about the roots of how African Americans found faith in the Americas. And Professor, when you hear the story of Exodus and you think of, we've discussed this on the show previously, you've got a group of literal Africans off the boats and African Americans born there getting Christianity through the filter of white slave masters. What did that do to the transmission of stories like Exodus?
Well, a couple things happened. One is that I think that there was a selective process within which enslaved Africans accepted Christianity. I don't think they just, even though they were given the religion as something to domesticate them, at the same time, there was something, again, about the human condition, about the resonance of the stories like the one Dr. Weems was talking about in Exodus, and the story of the deliverance of Daniel from the lion's den, and the story of Jesus' own resurrection, that was attractive to them. And so they were able to identify with those and give them strength, and then actually would, in many cases, didn't even accept some of the other parts. There's a great story that Howard Thurman tells about Thurman was a theologian and pastor, taught at Boston University, who his grandmother was a slave, and she could not read. But his job as a child was to read the Bible to her. And she said, read me the Psalms, read me the stories, read me about Jesus. Don't read me anything from Apostle Paul. And Thurman said, why is that? She said, well, when I was a slave, they told us that Paul said, slaves obey your masters. And I made up my mind that I didn't want to hear nothing else he had to say.
That's great. When you also think about people forming a sense of religion, and again, the messenger of that faith may have had his or her own agenda. What got carried over, and I'm going to ask you this, Renita, from the traditional forms of African worship? And let me just give you a story. I was in Zimbabwe not too long ago, where I have relatives, and there were all sorts of Christian faiths. I mean, it's a very Christian country, but there were some Christian traditions that were very ecstatic, where you would see people dancing and twirling and you know, out in the middle of a field, barefoot, dressed in certain clothes of worship, twirling. You would see other ones where people would be dressed all in white, sitting in a field, singing. You'd see other places that were traditional Western-style churches. So even in Africa, religion has evolved around Christianity. But what got inserted into the African-American worship from the African traditions?
We would have to say, by all means, what on one level, what scholars would call the kind of emotionalism, if you will, that kind of ecstatic worship, that kind of sense of jubilation and drama in our worship, drama in our music, drama in our understanding and our performance of our faith. So it is not a staid, kind of quiet, sober, sombering kind of worship. So I think certainly in terms of our dramatic understanding of our faith, that it is something that you feel, and it is carried over through the centuries. I think even now when we talk about this, I know we're not trying to go in terms of contemporary, but just in terms of the kind of neo-Pentecostalist movement and renewal that is with that a number of African-American churches now are experiencing. But that certainly that sense of it in our music and our the way we sing, the feeling that we put into our music, I think that all of those are certainly traits from our African heritage. So our music, our drama, our liturgy, our dance, and our absolute outburst in worship, and that sense of emotional and spiritual freedom, even if your body is not free.
I actually do want to walk us up to the present, and I also want to mention that although we're not really going to talk much about non-Christian faiths right at this second, this is a month-long series, and we will spend a lot of time on Islam and Buddhism, Judaism. But Professor Trulier, there was certainly a moment throughout the civil rights movement where the black church became identified with a certain form of liberation that transcended the church sphere and went into politics. Why do you think that happened? What was so important about the church in becoming a political agent?
Well, Dr. Weems earlier mentioned that in the African religious tradition, all of life is seen as one. And I think that there was a resurgence of that tradition in the civil rights movement, in that there was no area of life that was off limits. There was no part of the human experience, whether it's politics, economics, racial conventions, all of that was seen as fundamentally religious and very much a part of what God's agenda was for the nation at that time. In fact, Alden Morris, a sociologist in Michigan, has written a book on the origins of the civil rights movement, and he claims it's impossible to write the story of the civil rights movement apart from the activities of the black church.
Renita?
Very much. I think that one of the things that has happened over the centuries, but in particular as we look at the civil rights movement, there was a real sense in which it was important during that particular period for us to understand that there was a real critique that religion and that God was seen as a God who critiqued and not just our own personal salvation, but there was a sense in which that God has something to say about our entire person, the entire man, the entire woman. So what happened to us and what was happening to us politically and socially and economically were very much so on the minds of God, on the mind of God. So there was a real sense for African-American people that God was not just interested in our personal salvation, but also our social, political, and economic salvation.
Let me walk us forward another step. You have these mega churches, which are not only religious outlets, but can be doing real estate investment, community development, child care, personal wealth building. And Renita, where does that come from, and why at this point in time over these past few years has this become such an important part, certainly of the African-American church landscape, but just in general across the American landscape?
Well, there's certainly a sense within the African American church community that we have never had the luxury of just focusing on one aspect of African American people's lives, and that is the spiritual. We have always had to focus on the entire person, given our existence in this particular country. It has changed over the years, and as the church and as our lives have become more complex, the church as well has become much more complex. So now we find a number of these large mega churches that are boasting 5,000, 10,000 members that have just become corporations. They're no longer just churches, but they've also become corporations. And I think that there is room for some critique of some of that, because we have, in some ways, the church has become political and economically savvy, but the people themselves have not necessarily become politically and economically savvy. So the church preaches about a personal gospel, your personal growth, your individual salvation, but the church has moved away from it. The more the church has bought into government money and corporate funding, the church has ceased to become the kind of social criticizer or the offering a social critique and a political critique upon our culture. So I think that's one of the challenges of this whole mega church movement, that it has moved away from a kind of critique of our culture and now more focus on individuals.
Professor Trulier, last word, we don't have too long. People come and petition in front of churches, and I'm speaking here of presidential candidates and other politicians. What is the value to the black church? We know what the value is to the politicians. They want votes. Is there a value to the black church of being a place where people come to petition for political gain?
Well, there is if the black church is savvy enough to understand that politicians, in order to maintain their position, need to be able to deliver something. What we have to do is get beyond the sort of politics of symbolism where we're just glad we've got a black face in a political office and where we elect people just because they're black and they represent us and then we don't hold them accountable. What the black church has to gain is the fact that they can say to a candidate, whether that candidate be black, white, or of some other ethnic persuasion, if you want our vote, these are things that we care about, and your political platform and policies that you implement need to reflect our interests. And that's not something that we've done very well as a church at any time since the Civil Rights Movement.
Well, Harold Dean Trulier, Renita Weems, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Harold Dean Trulier is with us from WHYY in Philadelphia. He's Associate Professor of Applied Theology at Howard University. And Renita Weems writes about African Americans and religion. She's been published in Essence, Ebony, and BeliefNet.com, among others. And she joined us from Spotland Productions in Nashville.